Okay.
Welcome to episode 184 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, the only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, and practical living. So glad to be with you tonight on this Monday. This episode, as always, brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com. Turn that simp into a pimp. Bam! Heaven's Harvest, 10% off with promo code PERMA. Remember, those seeds are balling, y'all. I know I keep saying we're going to do a video about it, but man, we got so many things just jumping in line in front of it. And good night, man. Like I always say, source everything you can, anything you can't get. Go check them out at Heaven's Harvest. Promo code PERMA will get you 10% off. And if you would like to tip a pimp, as my little buddy says, in other words, well, let's do that again.
Tip a pip.
That's right. Timing's a little bit off, but you get the point. You can do it over there on the Fountain app. You can listen to all your podcasts over there, triple up the speed if you like. And if you want to drop a derivation of Bitcoin over there called sats, drop an SAT on a PIMP right over there on the Fountain app. All right, not going to mess around, y'all. Going to jump right into it with the farm news. Good night, man. It's always so much more and so busier to do a Monday show because, you know, obviously the last show was Thursday and you had Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then of course today. So you get a lot going on and it's always difficult to figure out, okay, what do I put in here because so much went on. Well, on Friday, I'll just jump into Saturday. The Farm Where You Live event was going on and it was just south of the airport a little bit in Asheville. And of course the pimp daddy himself, Joel Salatin, the pimp daddy of Polyface, he was there, and anytime Joel's around, believe me, I'm going to drop everything I can, if I can. Didn't know I was going to show up, really. Either one of us didn't really know until the day of, because we got all these little sheep running around. We got so many different irons in the fire going on right now. Didn't know if we'd be able to make it, but it was good to go over there and meet so many wonderful people, and a lot of you are listening right now. And, in fact, a couple of the people I've met there were ones I met before. It was a husband and wife team. And I'm going to have them on later in the week, and we're going to talk about a little thing that they're putting together. It's not necessarily a festival. Look, there's so many of us saying, good night, where do I go to find community? And, you know, outside of places like that, there are people that really don't know. So they're trying to put something together, and anybody in the area that wants to go, you know, it'll be a good little gathering. Like I said, it's not going to be something major or anything like that. It's just more or less going to be a get-together. Who knows, maybe if I can swing it, maybe I could even show up. All right, other things going on around the farm. Well, let me back up a little bit. Folks, anytime you get a chance to be in the company of somebody like Joel Salatin, good night, y'all. Take him. Okay, there was a fair amount of time where Joel is sitting over there by himself. Nobody's talking to him. Folks, I'm talking about, if you don't know, the most consequential farmer, I think, in world history. I don't even think there's a close second. Of course, Joel would never tell you that. But I don't know that there's ever been a person to I'll put it this. Look, y'all, I doubt I would be here right now. I doubt I'd be doing what we do right now if it weren't for Joel's books, if it weren't for his knowledge. Because, you know, up until this point, nobody ever really knew that this lifestyle was, at least not to, he made it attainable that being a farmer doesn't mean you have 1,000 acres. Farmer just means, like he always says, what makes the farm? The farmer. That's it. It's not difficult. But it seems like so many times I've been in one of these things and Joel's there. It's like he's sitting all alone and either people are afraid to go up and talk to him. Look, if you get the opportunity, he is the most personable dude you will ever meet. And he has an ability to remember things, folks, that'll absolutely blow your mind. He's so well-traveled. he's got more knowledge in just his little pinky than most of us will ever attain in a lifetime, especially when it comes to farming. So if you ever go to one of these things and he's sitting there, y'all, go up, introduce yourself, tell him what you got going on. Tell him what's happening. That's what he's there for, and he loves to help. So don't be so shy. Go up to this dude, because every single time I go there, y'all, I was talking about at like one of the last farm where you live things. I can't remember what it was, but Joel was there and there were some other internet people there, and Joel, there was, these folks were lining up to go talk to these internet folks. And I'm like, there wasn't a single person in line to talk to Joel. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. I'm like, folks, forget about people that are doing exclusively internet content. Got news for you. There's a lot of good ones out there, but some of the biggest ones out there, y'all, are not what they seem. They don't even do their own work. They don't even watch their own kids. It's none of that stuff. It's like, it truly is a business. And to a certain extent, a lot of them are just downright frauds. Well, but I say that with the caveat that there's a whole lot of people out there also doing really, really, really good work at the same time. So it just floors me that so many people are waiting in line to see somebody who's more polished than spit and more glitter than grit. You're not going to get better than Joel Salatin. So, like I said, take him up on it. All right, other things going on around here. Let's see, that was Saturday. So Sunday, we went out, visited a blueberry farm. And we've talked about it before. It was Cloud Nine Farms. And we were out there with a couple of friends just looking at some things, checking some things out. And, man, what a beautiful, beautiful place. Can't wait to do more videos about that place as soon as blueberry season kicks in. But they got a lot of Airbnbs out there, too. And I'm telling you what, that place is really, really, really nice. So, yeah, some of the other stuff, y'all. I know it's going to sound a little bit repetitive, but people want to hear what we're doing. Look, when I say that freeze dryer is running day and night, it ain't because there was an eclipse. We've been doing this for months and months and months, and it's going to continue till I can't do it anymore. Part of it has to do with the fact that I am still trying to make room in the freezers for all the animals I need to put in there, some of the ones that need to graduate. So that's a good way to do it. But instead of just taking, you know, single-use items like, let's say, beef, pork, chicken, lamb, whatever, I basically make meals out of it. So if I ever got to get into it, look, it's already done. Nobody wants to try to put together a meal if you're in the middle of some calamity or anything like it. So that's exactly what we work on doing. And so that, I'm not kidding y'all. When I say that thing's running day and night, it is. So that's another thing. We're in the comfrey season now. So if you need any, go check us out at the website. And it's one of those things, y'all. We're working ourselves out of business. And I think that's a wonderful thing, because I want this stuff so ubiquitous that I can't sell it. You dig? Because once you buy it, once you plant it, once you realize the benefits of it, and I don't know that anybody's done more videos on this thing than us, you'll realize you never got to buy it again. You can propagate it, give it to your neighbors, all that good stuff. So if you need any, like I said, Michelle's out there. She's basically doing a lot of that. And at the same time, I'm over here making bone sauce, world's best deer repellent. Of course, we make it here. And it requires a lot of work. And so we're just trying to keep up with demand right now and still run a farm. And then we still, to some extent, I know some people have wondered why we don't produce as much content. Well, folks, I'll be honest with you. I'm a farmer first. I'm not a YouTuber that farms. It's the other way around. I'm a farmer that just happens to have a YouTube channel. So we do what we can. And if some of those things kind of slow down a little bit or kick back, I kind of like doing these shorts. You know, I can kind of bring out my sense of humor a little bit, and I can hit a hard point without, you know, spending forever in a day editing. In fact, I don't even need to edit. I can just stand up there and say what's on my mind. I mean, I know a lot of, in my head, I really don't have to come up with anything. I get so many, I don't know, some people would call them crazy thoughts throughout the day, that I could probably do just a YouTube channel of shorts. So I'm going to try to lean on that a little bit more, but I still don't want to forget the idea that I know, like Joel says, there is a tsunami, quite literally a tsunami of people out there getting into this space. In fact, I met a lot of them down there at the Farm Where You Live event. And so many people are just, you know, they just feel perplexed. Folks, I get it. If you're new to this, or, you know, you haven't been at it for years like we have, I get it. You're going to feel like a pig on roller skates, but just be patient. don't be foolish and go out and get 10,000 animals. Just take your time. Get one thing, master it, then move on. I know it seems like the whole world's falling apart right now, but if you weren't watching TV or listening to any podcasts, political podcasts or anything like it, you probably wouldn't know about it. Well, minus the obvious inflation that's going on. But anyway, yeah, what else we got going here? We had to move the seedlings inside. Had a bit of a frost. It's crazy because we had 3 days of cold weather, like pretty much everybody else did. And we brought everything in, no frost damage on anything. And then on the last day, when it wasn't even supposed to get anywhere close to freezing, bam, what happens? Yep, you guessed it. So I'm hoping we didn't lose everything on these trees, but it looks to me like we lost some. So that sucks. But on the bright side, folks, this is why you want a permaculture garden. This is why you want a permaculture orchard. This is why you want a permaculture, obviously, a food forest. Here's why. Because when you have things, you should have things in your design that come up beginning, mid, and late season. Okay, so let's just say it's July. And let's say you got peaches. Okay, maybe you got some that come up in mid-June, late June. Maybe through mid-July. I mean, you get the point. That means if you lose anything, like a lot of these orchards everywhere, they're all going to have a cultivar of the same exact species. I can tell you how many for 10,000 reasons, just from the top of my head, well, that's a bad idea. Well, it's also a bad idea on your farm, because when you just marry yourself to one cultivar, any catastrophic loss, whether it's weather, let's say it's an early season peach like some of the ones I got down here now, okay, they suffered damage. Well, the mid and the late season didn't. You get the point. So permaculture is also preparedness. That's why we say permaculture, preparedness, and practical living. Whole lot of peas in there. I get it. But that is the reason why, is that when you have a loss, it isn't catastrophic. That's exactly what I try to, I mean, this is, I think to unmarry permaculture with preparedness is a colossal mistake, and for those reasons. So like I said, we lost some things, but it's not the end of the world, okay? It's not going to be the early cultivar, but at least I'll get the mid and late. But if you're like, for example, one of the apple orchards, one of my favorite to go to is in Hendersonville. It's called Granddad's Orchard. It's one of the few places that has these Evercrisps. Now, since they started doing it, everybody else around here started getting on the bandwagon, and of course, I bought the patent, and I got them growing out here. Now, the problem was, what was it, 2 years ago, I think? Nobody could find an Evercrisp to save their lives. Why? Because a frost came in, and it completely wiped out the entire crop. You would think that they would say, okay, yeah, I know we made a lot on these Evercrisps and everything, but you think you would have some mitigation strategies in place. Like Stefan of Subkoviak, I mean, he has a Mister system. That could have probably prevented what happened that time. So it's little things like that, or just getting yourself cultivars that are beginning, mid, and late. So think about that, whether no matter what it is, whether it's blueberry, raspberry, apples, you name it, oranges, I don't care what it is. I mean, I don't know about tropical fruit much, but I think you get the point. If you can find beginning, mid, and late, it adds an element of redundancy that you're just not going to find at a classic orchard. So keep that in mind as well. So like I said, we got those seedlings inside and everything seems to be kicking right now. All right. Got to hit the elephant in the room. Man, I got a lot of good response on that video I did regarding the eclipse. I mean, I think anybody that listens to this podcast, you probably heard me say it. And that's what I want to do more of, is where it's, you know, I'm pointing out something that's true, that to me anyway. And you know, if I can make it funny, you can even take very, very uncomfortable subjects. If you can somehow wrap them in humor, it makes it a little more palatable for some people. But anyway, eclipse came, went, and like so many others that experienced it, of course, we didn't get the full one here, but we got enough of it to where you can start hearing the night critters kind of making their noises all of a sudden, and gets a little bit colder. Even the chickens, it's funny to watch the behavior in animals, because Michelle and I were on the porch when this thing became, you know, as dark as it was going to get. And you can immediately see the behavior change in all the chickens, in the sheep to a lesser extent, but you can still see it nonetheless. So it's always cool to see some of these celestial events. But I want you to keep in mind, take note. And here's why I'm telling you, because I remember in 2017, a lot of other people may not remember this stuff, but look, I got these books on the shelf down there. All the people, I won't name any names necessarily, but you can find them. All these evangelicals that wrote these books about these eclipses and the blood moons and what they might portend. Think every last one of them were wrong. And then even some of these people that claim to be rabbis or whatever they claim to be, you ever find it curious that in every one of their books, they never tell you what's going to happen in the future, but they'll tell you how what has already happened aligns with what they found in, you know, somewhere, one of the books in the Bible. You ever find that curious? I know I sure do. Well, on this date, it was surmised also that these five red heifers that they got out of Texas. See, I'd heard about this story long before others, because I listened to other podcasts, and I think it was on Blurry Creatures. Ben Holler turned me on to that one. And it's a good podcast, and their content is great. And they had some guys on there a while back out of Texas, I want to say Houston, and they talked about how they were the ones that supply, or at least very intimate into the exchange of these red heifers and what they went through. Now, for those that don't know, it was believed. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I think the beginning of April, I think they hit the age at which they could sacrifice them. Well, it was believed by many that it was probably going to happen on this eclipse. And for those that don't know, thinking, okay, what's the big deal? Yeah, there's a lot of red heifers in DC. Yeah, there's another little short I'll be doing, I'm sure. But yeah, a bunch of lunatics out there too. Anyway, if they're to build a third temple, supposedly, and I put that in supposedly, if they're going to build this, they basically got to make soap out of the red heifer. You know, going back to the Levitical thing, I'm not into it. You know, to me, Jesus solved all the things on the cross. I'm not even slightly believing any of a lot of what I hear out of that stuff, but they believe it. And some people even believe that the Palestinians, part of their issue is, hey, man, they got these red cows and they're about to get stupid with it. Well, what this means, I mean, did it happen today? If they were going to do it, they probably did it under lock and key. It was probably a very hush-hush sort of thing. And it probably, maybe it happened. I don't know whether it did or didn't. If it did and it gets out, folks, hold on to your hat. That's all I'm going to say. This is why you need to have your freeze dryer and your food preparedness and everything else kicking 100%, because what will almost certainly happen is that another great conflagration in the Middle East will unfold. And then all of a sudden, you'll understand why they've been recalling all of these retirees from the U.S. military. Didn't hear about that? Well, it's been happening. And they're able to recall them up to the age of 70. I kid you not. Because they can't get anybody to join, or they can't pass even the low standards that now exist to get into the military. So I'm sure in time it'll be a draft. It'll be a lot of other things going on, but it all surrounds around this red heifer issue going on. So if anybody's wondering if you really, really want to hear a full-blown analysis on this, I mean, probably the best one I've heard so far is at the Fearless podcast. Go check them over there. TD knocked it out of the park. And I agreed with probably every word that he said regarding a lot of this stuff. And man, he had one incredible analysis that you really ought to check out over there. So, all right, before I get into the good news, just remember this weekend coming up, April 12th and 13th, Keeper of the Old Ways in Dothan, Alabama. Wish I could be there. It's a really wonderful crowd, a really great place, man. It's really more cosmopolitan than you would have thought. Because who ever heard of Dothan, Alabama? But it's actually pretty nice down there. Mountain Readiness is going to be coming up on May 3rd through the 5th. Daniel Salatin is going to be there. Mike the Fit Farmer is going to be there. I'll be there. A bunch of other people are going to be there too. And it's one of, like I said, it's one of the best festivals you never even heard of. All right, before we get into the good news, I want to remind you, Redemption Shield. It's where they sell those grounding mats, the shielding hats, all the stuff that I use around here. Remember, as a journeyman electrician with 25 years experience, y'all, I'm telling you, I've reached out to a number of companies saying, hey, let me test your stuff and try it out. Redemption Shield was the only one that said, okay, not only check it out, if it ain't right, let us know. We'll make it right. So that's why I reached out to Redemption Shield and all things grounding. Look, folks, there is not a day, multiple times during the day. I will stop midday. I kid you not. I will stop midday. If the weather is inclement outside, I go inside, take my shoes and socks off, get on that mat, do my deep breathing, and then continue on with the day. I did it today. I do it probably twice a day. Once in the morning while I'm doing my Bible study, and then of course, you know, midday somewhere. So Redemption Shield, I'm telling y'all, they are the cat's meow. That's exactly what we use around here. So you can get 10% off with promo code PERMA at Redemption Shield. So go check them out. Remember, promo code PERMA. All right, so let's get into some of this good news. So this is actually, some of this is really good news. All right, I wanted to hit this up because I'm talking about preparedness a little bit earlier. Now, the main topic isn't going to be about preparedness, but I do want to point these out because I know a lot of people are putting back certain things, and you may have certain concerns, like some of you may have blood sugar issues or something like that. And one of the things a lot of people in the preparedness put back is sugar. And which, by the way, y'all, don't put oxygen absorbers in your sugar. You're going to hate yourself because you're going to be chipping it out because it's going to go solid. I kid you not. If you do it, ask me how I know, y'all. I know. It doesn't make it bad. It just makes it hard. So anyway, sugar, of all the kinds of sweeteners to put back, is clearly not the best. It may be the most available to you. It may be the most affordable sometimes. But like I said, there may very well be people with blood sugar issues. So maybe think about some of these other ones, like agave nectar or agave syrup. It's low. It has a low glycemic index. I remember Michelle. I mean, y'all, if there's any, I mean, this is stuff she's been at for a long, long time. She would use this stuff, not because of blood sugar issues, but because it is low glycemic index. And depending on how you use it, it's almost imperceptible. I mean, monk fruit, another one out there. Really, really good example. You know, another one is not necessarily on the low glycemic level, but is definitely better than the, you know, the raw sugar that you're, the white sugar. That's going to be coconut sugar or coconut palm sugar. Honey, obviously, we got bees here, and those bees are more valuable to us in terms of bartering their honey than it is actually selling it. It really doesn't make sense for us to sell honey unless you do something. And if you are one of those people that do honey, maybe consider value adding some of it. But anyway, that's one of those things that you can put back, y'all. They found stuff in King Tut's tomb that could easily be reconstituted. It never goes. It's the one food that will not spoil. Ain't that something? Wow. Right out of nature. And of course, stevia. Yeah. So, Michelle, I remember stevia was illegal when she first started growing it. Now, like I said before, we don't obey unjust laws. So Jimmy cracked corn and I don't care. Jimmy could have been smoking crack and we still don't. Well, Jimmy don't smoke crack, but you get the point. But Michelle was growing stevia way back when, and long, I mean, we're talking like decades ago. And I remember I dried this stuff. We didn't have a freeze dryer back then. In fact, I'm not even sure back then they were even selling them. But I remember taking a bunch of those leaves. And I was never a big fan of it. It was like super sweet, yeah, but it had this awful aftertaste in there. And I remember taking a bunch of leaves and I'm putting them in not a freeze dryer, but a regular dryer. And put it in the blender, made a powder out of it, and it wasn't wonderful. But I guess if you were in a bind and you were that addicted to sugar, you just had to have it. Good night, man. I guess it would work, but I know there's extracts of it that are much, much better. But anyway, stevia is a real good option out there. You can grow it, and it's pretty robust, and it keeps for a long, long time. Then, like I said, since that time, I'm sure people have made developments or found ways to make it a little more palatable. Like I said, it was sweet, but it just, if you're in a Western culture, you're accustomed to the sugar kind of sweet, or better still, some of that high fructose corn syrup. That's why, which by the way, they don't use in Mexican Coke. That's why Mexican Cokes taste so much better, because they don't use high fructose corn syrup. That's only for you people in the United States of Amnesia. So here's another good one. I wanted to point this out because I know a lot of people listen to us and watch us they might be a little limited in terms of your mobility. So this one here is like four useful items for preppers with mobility issues, whether, you know, you may be in a wheelchair or, you know, you may need a cane to get around, whatever the case may be. I know this is almost self-evident, but maybe some folks haven't heard about it, or maybe you're on the way to becoming a little more disabled. I mean, who knows? It could be an accident around the corner for any of us. So a dolly cart is one of the things they suggest to move around the garden. A grocery cart. Now, I'm going to disagree with that one a little bit, because now they got these carts. You can even get them at Home Depot, where they got the bigger wheels on them. They're easy to drag. They got really good bearings on them. They move around. Some people even say a rolling office chair. I think they make better versions of that, but I think you get the point. And obviously the wagon is the one I was talking about, the other, in addition to that. Like I said, a lot of that is like, duh. But honestly, you don't even need to be disabled to use and utilize, because everything there except for the wheelchair I use and I've used. So keep that in mind. It's not just for the disabled, man. It's little things like that, the little combat multipliers. I'll just tell you briefly, like one of the things I get on Michelle on all the time about is that in the morning, she'll want to walk up and down the hills. And I'm like, honey, you have to be a little more, you only got so much in the tank, and we're not spring chickens anymore. Look, conserve your energy, use the vehicle to get up and down the hill. But of course she's looking at it as a workout, and then nighttime rolls around and then she's completely wore out. But it's little things like that that will make all the difference in the world when you have a mountain of work to do, as we do around here, and you have limited time. So don't be Johnny Hardcore, as they said in the Army all the time. Go out there, use the tools you can. Now, somebody's going to say, well, Billy, every class you teach, you always do it low tech. You're absolutely right, because you can always employ those high tech things. And it's the low tech things that everybody thinks or forgets about. Look, remember that Jessica Lynch that, oh, shoot, it turned into a big fiasco. She was one of those people that was attacked in a convoy. She was in a vehicle convoy. And the Iraqis captured her for a while. And then, of course, the media manufactured this big rescue thing. It was like something straight out of a Hollywood movie. Well, let me just back up a little bit. If there was one person in that unit, because their GPS systems weren't working, if there was one person that had a compass and a map, I know it's in the desert, but still a compass would have been helpful. They drove in the wrong direction because they had no idea. They didn't have a compass. They didn't have a map. So when they were relying on these GPS systems, guess where it led them? Right into the enemy's hands. So think about those things. That's one example I use often, as for people always wonder, well, why don't we just use a Sawzall to get through this animal? Well, yeah, I could, but I'm not. If I'm out here as a 53-year-old man and I'm sawing through this with my hands, well, I don't want to hear any complaints out of you. So that's exactly why I teach it that way. Even on my own, when I do these things by myself, by and large, I mean, I got a bandsaw out in the garage. I could use it. But by and large, I'd never want to forget those motor skills of doing this stuff. Plus, the physical work of actually doing it makes all the difference in the world. So that's one thing I wanted to point out too. All right, so last good news. You may not. To me, it's good news. All right, so men who claim to be transgender have won nearly 300 titles in female sports. So I'm calling this good news is because this is how it's going to change. Women have got to get outraged. And it's going to happen. It's going to happen. First, you had, I think, Martina Navratilova speak out about it. And, of course, they came down on her like a ton of bricks. Here, more and more and more, you see this, like, this train, this slow-rolling train. Women are like, man, we fought so hard to do this and that, that and this, and now you're trying to take that away from us too? But some of these people are very much on the left. So they feel hamstrung, thinking, okay, I can't possibly say anything about it. But, look, I got news for you. It's hitting the point of critical mass. When you got people like Fallon Fox, who is a man out there in mixed martial arts, beating women unconscious. Yes, it is a man, transgender, fighting women, beating them unconscious. Sooner. And then, like I said, all these titles, 300 titles so far that women have completely been stripped of because men are now competing in female sports. And like I said, this is good news because it has got to hit a point of critical mass before we, the people or sheeple, whatever we are these days, before we wake up, that's exactly where it's got to get. All right, with that said, let's go into my man, Eric Sider.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, what permaculture can offer. Permaculture can offer a huge benefit to people new to living on the land or growing food, potentially saving thousands of dollars. What is less obvious is what it can offer people very knowledgeable in one discipline or who have been on their property for decades. We all have our blinders on and emotional attachment to our property. This is why an outside, objective perspective can be so helpful. I recently visited a friend's property, an amazing 2-acre lot right in the middle of the suburbs. It would be a permaculture paradise. He's a great gardener with a lot of plant knowledge. They've been on this property for 30 years. They produce a ton of food. There are multiple fruit trees. They have chickens and even horses. What they don't have is a mainframe design. It's just been built out over time without a clear plan of the overall system. While it produces well, it can be optimized for efficiency greatly. The 2 horses on the 2 acres is a problem. The pasture is suffering. And as much as I love horses, if they are not used for work or transportation, they are just very expensive pets. This is the emotional attachment. So even a total redesign of the property would still make it difficult to support 2 horses on 2 acres without outside feed. But in the current system, you would need to feed them in place periodically to give the pasture a rest. Making big changes comes down to priorities. Everyone has busy lives and limited time, so a design change that requires a lot more physical input is not a good solution. But if your first priority is earth care, then the solutions become simple. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider, and if you're in need of permaculture t-shirts or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com.
Bam! That's my dog right there. Speaking of which, ran into one of his clients out here at this farm where you live event. And of course, everybody that works with Eric is always like, man, that guy is the cat's meow. And folks, I couldn't agree more when it comes to things like horses. Like you said, if they're not used for transportation or something like that, yeah, I love horses. But what you're going to find, and I guarantee in a 2-acre lot, those people have shot those horses up with every dewormer you could imagine just to keep them alive. Well, what do you think that does to your soil? You're killing your top predator in the soil, which is your worm. And of course, everything downstream is dying. So, yeah. And then of course, the compaction and all those other things. Horses are not an efficient addition to the farm unless you do them like Greg Judy has, where he'd bring horses out there just to eat the excess grass when he didn't have enough stock. So yeah, think about those things. I know everybody has this not everybody, but so many people like, man, I want a horse. I want all this and that. Unless you can graze them properly, y'all, you're going to be in a serious money pit, man. Horses are very, very, very expensive for your farm, but I've seen people employ them responsibly. All right. So EMP Shield, y'all, $50 off with promo code PERMA. Once again, I'm 25-year journeyman electrician, IBEW trained, and a member in good standing still to this day, even though this is what I do. Anyway, when I wanted to find something that was a transient voltage surge suppressor on another level, look, EMP Shield, once again, they didn't hit me up. They're like Redemption Shield. EMP Shield did not hit me up. I got to them because I know how good their product is. And folks, I'll stand behind it because they stand behind it. If you get it on your house and you have a lightning strike that hits that house, you tell me of anybody in the business that will cover you for 25 G's if anything gets Kentucky Fried downstream. Nobody. And then the ones they have, even that EMP Micro that they now have for vehicles. I mean, good night, y'all. Something jumps off. Whatever the case may be. And remember, when it comes to these things like, eclipses and stuff like that, it usually doesn't always happen. If there's any tremors or anything like that, it doesn't happen on the day. It's usually within 10 days plus or minus of the actual date. So, I mean, things, you know, I could cite examples in history, but the point being is if anything, EMP Shield will square you away for 25 G's. If anything gets Kentucky Fried downstream, you're driving around, things jump off. Vehicles stop on the side of the road. Your first response isn't, gee, I need to go to the liquor store. No, not unless you got problems, nephew. Your idea is to get to the crib. You need to get to your house. So EMP Shield is going to get you squared away on that. Remember, promo code PERMA will get you $50 off. All right, so I'm going to jump right into it, y'all. Okay. Yeah, this is one of those things, man. I get so much feedback. I can't believe I haven't done an episode before now, but when I'm out at some of these events like Farm Where You Live and some of the others, you know, I get hit with a lot of questions that I really need to address. And right here in this podcast is a really great place to do it. And folks, not everybody, it seems most people kind of understand what I'm getting at when I'm saying, don't forget about your nitrogen fixtures in your design. Like Eric said, it's easier to obviously design on the front end than it is to do it on the back end. What I mean by all of this is, so we use the NAP design, basically inspired by Bill Mollison, made popular by Stefan Subkowiak, where you have a nitrogen fixing tree, an apple, and then a pear, then a nitrogen fixing tree, and then it'll be two other fruit trees. You get the point. So this pattern goes over and over and over again with the expectation that the nitrogen fixer that's surrounding each productive tree is essentially the root nodules are going to intertwine with one another, and the nitrogen fixing nodules that are on the nitrogen fixing tree will interact with the nodules on your productive tree. And of course, it's going to be like ready-made fertilizer because it's taking nitrogen from the atmosphere and putting it down into the soil, and those nodes have got to be touching. So that's the idea. Now, people seem to think that's a waste of time. And I'm here to tell you, as somebody who does this work, it is one of the best investments you're ever going to do, especially when you overlay permaculture with preparedness. Here's what I'm getting at. Let's think about the benefits of that nitrogen fixture. Like I said, it's taking that atmospheric nitrogen and it's putting it down into the soil for the benefit of everything all the way around it, okay? But here's what else you got to consider. That nitrogen fixture, depending on which one it is, it could be like the honey locust, the thornless honey locust that I picked up the other day, or actually out there at Farm Where You Live. Thornless honey locust, you know, has pods on there. You can feed that to your animals. But in addition to that, every nitrogen fixing, I don't care what it is, overstory, understory, shrub, ground cover, you name it. Every nitrogen fixer typically attracts the kind of beneficial insects that are going to assassinate your pests. Okay. That's another reason why you want it in there. You also want these things in every layer of your food forest and orchard. So you want an overstory that's a nitrogen fixer. You want an understory. You want a shrub. In our case out here, it's sea buckthorn. Okay, that's a nitrogen fixer, but it's also edible because you can have the two overlap. Now there's going to be, you want to do research on that because it may be a mountain laurel, something that might very well be poisonous. So to your animals anyway. But you might also keep it because they will partake only enough of what they need to get rid of whatever parasites they have. Sean and Beth Doherty talk a great deal about that as well. So in every single layer, I'm talking all the way down to the herbaceous layer, you want to have those nitrogen fixers in there, even though they may not be something you can eat. And it seems counterproductive to a lot of people out there that are getting into this space and like, dude, I'm not going to put a tree over here taking up real estate that I can't use. Well, you're thinking short-sightedly. You're not thinking about the shade that it may provide to some of your understory, if it is a big one. You're not thinking about the food that it could provide to your animals. You're not thinking about the shade that it could provide to your animals. You're not thinking about the beneficial insects that are there solely because you have that nitrogen fixer. You're not thinking about the ability of a lot of these nitrogen fixers, as I've demonstrated over and over again, and I'm about to do another video where I talk about it, is where a lot of these nitrogen fixers, it could be black locust, although not the best in the world for this, but this some of these others, I can literally plant in the same exact hole as my productive tree, and I can cut it off or coppice it or pollard it and use it as a mulch ring around my tree. So these are things that you can actually do with your nitrogen fixtures where you're thinking, okay, I can't eat it. Well, other things can. Other things are benefited by it. That is why they're in these designs. Even out in your fields, in your pasture, your cover crops out there, people are like, oh, I don't want any clover in my field. Well, the only reason You have bloating animals, and Dr. Elaine Ingham has talked about this a great deal, and even Jim Gerrish, is that you're putting chemicals on it, and the chemicals can't be metabolized by these animals. But if you grow the clover naturally out there, or if you were to seed it and add some mycorrhizal fungal on it, or, you know, whatever the case may be, if you were to have all these things, you'll find out that, gee, all the things around it benefit as well. And not only the plants that grow around it, but also in addition to that, what's also going to benefit is clearly your animals as well, because now they're getting a protein source. And even in your, read Masanobu Fukuoka's book, One Straw Revolution. You've heard me talk about it numerous times. Look at what he did with his nitrogen fixtures out in his, well, I wouldn't call them pastures. They were basically rice fields. He would, and it's just genius when you stop to think about it, but he would basically grow an ocean of, let's say, clover, be a bunch of different clovers out there. And then when he's ready to plant rice, he just removed the clover from the spot that it was in and put the stalks of rice in there. And then, okay, when the rice crop was done, basically they'd chop and drop, and then they'd seed the barley, but they would put it in little clay packets. It was a beautiful, beautiful system, and I doubt that it's still going on over there. But that's exactly the same point, is that in that sea, you have this sea of nitrogen-fixing clover. Now you have all this beneficial stuff growing up out of there. So folks, don't forget the value. Going right back to what Eric said, do not forget the value of good design. You may be thinking, and the only ones that really have a problem with this thinking are people that are really, really dyed in the wool of reductionistic Western thinking, which is what I've been trying to beat out of myself for going on, I'd say more than a decade at this point, and it's still an uphill battle concerning certain things. Instead of looking at things at a holistic way and looking at it in how nature would do it, well, we always tend to look at things in a reductionistic worldview. So we're looking for a one-shot solution to a problem, when really all you have to do in a lot of cases, I'm not saying it's going to eliminate all your problems, but it's going to go a long way into bringing you that one step closer to nature just by putting your nitrogen fixtures in every single element, in every single layer of your food forest and your orchards, and also out in your pastures. Like I said, I don't understand why people trip. I got clover growing. I got entire patches of clover. No problems whatsoever. No bloat, no nothing. So it's not a genetic disorder. Like I said, Jim Gerrish and Elaine Ingham have talked about it a great deal. So if you want to know more about that, go check out their stuff as well. So, I mean, like I said, bug repellent, fertilizer, chop and drop, feeding your animals. Do not miss the benefits of awesome nitrogen fixtures out there, y'all. Because, like I said, the only what really spurred me to do this are some of the conversations I had out there at this last festival. So just keep those in mind. All right. So before we get into the Q&A, I want to remind you, TexasBoys.com is sponsor of this section of the show. Anything at their website, you get 5% off with promo code PERMA, P-E-R-M-A. And like I said, they also got that Fearless podcast. And I'm going to tell you once again, y'all, if you haven't listened to the episode, especially that they did on the Red Heifers, man, you really got to check it out, because I don't know that I've heard anybody say it more concisely, exactly what's going on and what, and really the hoax that a lot of it is, that it really is. So I'd highly suggest that you go over there and check them out. All right, with that said, we'll get into the Q&A section. We got with this one from Charles. And yeah, he sent this video. I'll try to describe it the best I can. And I really wanted to cover this because I've seen this video a number of times in the past. Now, I'm going to describe it for you. And I think it was on TikTok or something like that. So I'm going to put it to you this way. This guy has a garden, basically raised beds out there, and he's got a rod sticking up out of the ground, and it has a copper coil at the top of it. And I can't really tell because the quality wasn't really wonderful, but if I had to guess, it looked like number 6 soft drawn copper. And is going down this pole, goes underground, and then comes up on the other side of a garden. And it appeared as if this guy was doing some sort of experiment. Apparently, it hits an aluminum rod. I think it looked like conduit, so I'm going to call it steel, but he said it was aluminum. And then there's a zinc bolt sticking out of the top of that aluminum rod that he said. Okay. So there's a lot of this sort of thing going on out there. Does it work? I don't know. I've never actually tried it. There's a big reason I'm bringing this up, and I'll get to that in a minute. There's a lot of these old timers and back in the day, y'all, they had knowledge that we don't understand. There are people out there that can divine for water and all this stuff. You know, there's more than what's going on around us than our five senses, almost assuredly. I mean, I'm certain of it. But here's what I'm getting at. He claimed that it worked like nobody's business. Now, is it another hoax out there? Probably not. But really, as an electrician, I know that what he made there essentially was a battery. That's really what a battery is. It's basically two dissimilar substances, and all it's doing is one is moving electrons from one side to the other. That's basically how a battery works, is the movement of electrons through that material. Well, it seems to me that that's kind of what he made, because if you got copper on one end and you got aluminum, you have electrolysis going on. You got copper to aluminum. This is exactly why we use a product called Nolox whenever we have to take copper and apply it to aluminum. Okay. That's why they make that product. So you don't have any degradation of any of the materials, because when you have two dissimilar metals touching, something's going to oxidize. So what I'm wondering, and the guy, judging by the video, clearly had some positive effect. Does it work? Maybe. I mean, I'd love to give that a shot. There's so many experiments I'd love to do. And the reason why I brought that up is that there's another experiment, and I'm going to take my time on this one to try to explain it in a way that makes sense. Check this out. There's a guy, and I don't recall his name. Let me back up even more. After World War I, there was a guy flying over apparently one of the Great Pyramids in Giza. And it just happened to be on the equinox. And during that time, this pilot noticed that those pyramids are not actually four sides. They're actually eight-sided. It's crazy. In each side of that pyramid, so imagine you're looking down on one of the Great Pyramids, so it has four sides. Believe it or not, on each side of that pyramid, if you were to draw a line from the top of the pyramid down the middle of one side, and you were able to cut it and then push it to the middle a little bit, it's actually concaved to the middle at so incredibly slight an angle that it is imperceptible, except on that time of year. Now, there was a guy on a program, this is years ago, swore up and down that this worked. He was on, in fact, it was on Coast to Coast AM, if I'm not mistaken. It may have been with Art Bell. That's how long ago it was. But anyway, this guy brought up the very same thing that I'd seen in this television show years ago. And I was like, this is astonishing, man. I mean, these things are actually eight-sided, and the only time you can tell it with the naked eye is on the equinox. So anyway, this guy made a replica of this very same thing in his garden. Now, as a control, he grew plants. Let's say it was a tomato plant. And in fact, I think it was what he used. He took a regular, he didn't put anything around it. He just grew a tomato plant. And then he made, and I don't know what he made it out. It may have been wood. And anyway, he made this pyramid structure over this other tomato plant. And he built it. He found out that if he just made a regular pyramid, four-sided pyramid, didn't change anything in the angles, nothing happened. But when he concaved everything to the inside and made it eight-sided, essentially, he said that thing grew like it was on steroids. Like it was literally and he did it over and over and over again. So that's one of those experiments that I was always kind of curious to find out. So when I see things like what this guy's talking about with essentially, you know, as a battery, when I see things like that, I'm always curious to think, man, I wonder if that actually works. I mean, it might very well work. I would love to give that a shot. I have no doubt that in this ethereal realm that there's so many things that are either hidden from us, or we just are too foolish or been forgotten through history. I don't know. But I've always wanted to try that pyramid example and just give it a shot. In fact, there's even a healing chamber in Russia where they've done the very same thing. And apparently they put people inside that healing chamber, set up just like a pyramid in the very same way. And apparently people heal at record rates. So, I mean, have I done it? No. I'd love to give it a shot. But if anybody, any of you intrepid tinkerers out there want to give it a shot, let me know. Do the research on it. You know, help the whole world out. Let me know how it worked out because I want to try it myself. I wonder how you put that around your whole farm, though. Anyway, you know, In fact, it's really been on my mind to try something like that. I'd love to see how that guy did it, but I couldn't get a visual reference because it was an audio medium specifically back then. All right, so we got another question here. Let's see here. Hey, Billy, I heard you say on the podcast that Eric Satter had a recipe for making something similar to Cardio Miracle. Would you be able to share it? Yeah, it's essentially beetroot powder, if I remember it correctly. You may have to reach out to Eric for that one, but I seem to remember it being beetroot powder. And just as a little experiment, I made some the other day. Check this out. So I went down to, what was it? Oh, one of the health food stores, and I got some organic beets. Now, we have these organic beets of ours. They're just not the really red ones. It's another variety. They're not as strong. The flavor isn't anywhere near as strong. So I went out there. I said, you know what? I wonder if I can make some of this stuff myself. So I basically bought a couple of beets, grated them on like a cheese grater, took all that. Well, let me back up a little bit. I sliced it first and then tried to stick it in the freeze dryer. It didn't work out. It didn't dry out well enough. So I said, well, okay, let me try the cheese grater. So I did that on the cheese grater, stuck it in the freeze dryer. And then when it was all said and done, put it in a blender, made a powder out of it. And now I can make capsules out of it. So I was like, okay, well, that's a way of going about it. I mean, is it the same? I don't know. I mean, you look at things like Dr. McCullough, you look at his, it's beetroot powder and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm definitely going to look into this stuff and see if there's more of this kind of thing that I can do. But that's another benefit of having a freeze dryer. I'm not saying that, y'all, just because we get a monetary benefit from it. But yeah, the freeze dryer is turning. I got it. So I'm going to use this thing as best I can. I mean, it's better than dehydrated any day of the week as far as I'm concerned. All right, y'all, hopefully that was a blessing to you. Until next time, stay alert, stay alive.
Always catches the worm.